Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Define You Radio, where you get lessons, tips, and more from those who decided to define life on their own terms and are changing the lives of others. Pens and papers ready. Class is now in session.
I think me and the queens are going to have to get together and maybe sing for the new Define You Radio intro. Hello, and welcome to Define You Radio, classes in session, where you get the life lessons, strategies, and so much more to teach you how to define life on your own terms. I am your host, y'all know the voice, the Southern Belle of Bold, Valencia Griffin Wallace, and of course, I'm so excited because I am joined tonight by one of my beautiful hot seat queens, Miss LaVon. Go ahead and say hey to the audience.
Hey, audience.
Now, if y'all listened in last week live, you know we didn't do Hot Seat Tuesday. We had Wow Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So tonight we're having another Wow Wednesday, and you know, y'all need to get y'all pens and papers ready because we're really just bringing on the quality and the quantity, and we're just bringing on everything you need to know and more, because right now it's all about the Atlanta Black Theater Festival happening in Atlanta the first week in October, and I will be there. I'm trying to drag my queens by the crown, if need be, to be there. So so that's my two cents. Tonight I'm really excited, and it's a very interesting topic. You guys make sure you're following the Define You Radio Facebook page to keep up with tonight's show, future shows. You never know what we're going to do or who we're having on, so we'd love to hear your comments as well. We're joined by an award-winning playwright, Miss Jeanette Hill. Hey, Jeanette.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. We're really excited to have you on and talk about Clean Sheets. But before we get into that, why don't you go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about you?
I always hate this part. I'm a playwright, producer, director, now writer. I've been picked up for a couple of anthologies for some fiction and nonfiction. But I write what I feel. They've been trying to find a niche for me for the past 5 years because I'm not traditional, I'm not classic, I'm not urban. So we just restructured it and said that I'm a creative activist because of the type of topics mm-hmm. that I address. So what I do is I'm just blazing the road wherever I can get through. That's
love
what
it.
I do. I write, you know, different kinds of things. I'm definitely not afraid to approach any topic. So if it's out there, the best way for me to explain what I am, I write about Black life the way Black people live it.
Jesus. Oh, I'm sorry. Was my line not muted when I said that? I feel like Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth. I'm going to be calm. Like, I almost feel like since Shannon's not here, which, you know, hey, Shannon,
oh,
if
God.
You're listening mm-hmm. in, but you know, Shannon is our, it's words, our cut-up queen. She's normally the one that mm-hmm. goes in. I'm the mediator, and LaVon is more of the, I don't know if calm is the correct word. I'm going to work on that. But one of the things I always say, LaVon will hit us with some Bible out the blue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I got to find a term, because she's one of those people that could definitely go from, you know, gangster to gospel in about 5 seconds.
Let me get her tongue. She's a warm worshiper.
Yes, love it. Love it. Love it.
I do. I like it.
You like that, LaVon? We're going to have to.
Yeah,
your hashtag.
I
I love that you said the the way black people live their lives, because there's so, I always tell people there's levels to black. Just like there's different mm-hmm. shades of black, there's levels to black. That's the best way I could say it. But as you're writing, because everybody's process is different, as you're writing, what helps you get into the level of black you're writing about?
I know all of the artists will tell you this. My character is just as real to me as people sitting next to you right now are real to you. And so as I look around life, and I've lived long enough to experience some life, and I see life happening all around me, I just take what I'm seeing and I throw some of the people I am, because I have this, my creative space is called the Amen Circle, and it's a fictional place that I've designed. And what it basically is, it's like a freed slave bought all this acreage, made it into a park, and then they put all these houses and churches around it. But with all the Jesus that you would think would be on, with all these churches on every corner, hell breaks loose daily.
Jesus.
And so that's what I write about.
I love that. LaVon, I'm going to go ahead and let you kick off with your, I know you have some questions, if you want to go ahead and kick off tonight's interview.
I do. Jeanette, I love that you have coined that phrase, titling yourself a creative activist, because it's usually two words you don't hear together. You know, an activist, you know, for me, when I read that, I'm thinking, you know, fists in the air, you know, chanting and protesting. But as I continue to read through your story and read through how your writings come about, I can see, you know, the activist in the creation coming together. Can you tell us a little bit about that process? How do you bring out way where you're able to paint the picture, but you're also bringing that message?
As well, it's because I try to bring it as we live our lives, the way that we live our lives. When you look at a lot of stories about African Americans, one, unfortunately, a lot of them are not written by African Americans.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
so you have a story that is presented about us by someone who is not us. And so that will always bring you a slightly different spin or different perspective on how that story is told. And that's one of the reasons that I went into the activist mode, because I tell our stories with our voice. So when I see stories and it's like, oh, well, they have, you know, they have this angry black woman and she's either drinking or she's smoking or she cussed somebody out. Okay, yeah, there are women like that, but there are also women who will take you, sit you down at a table, get a glass of ice water, and school you.
Yes.
So, you know, I try to show all facets of it, you know, not just the ones where they're looking to make the money, where, oh, yeah, we need to show mm-hmm. this. We need to show the brothers as, you know, always being angry, always trying to fight. That's why you'll always, you may find a brother in something I've written where they may be a little off to the left, but you're going to also mm-hmm. find a brother that knows who he is and knows how to present who he is and know how to keep you out of that space.
Wow.
So I just like doing this. Yeah, the same way with women, you know, just because we're so vast. When you said they're so different, so many different ways, shades of black, we are so vastly different until there's just no way to pigeonhole, oh, write about a black woman. Okay, no, I need more than that. You know, I need more than that. What about her? Is she a mother? Is she a doctor? Is she a lawyer? Is she a streetwalker? Is she somebody that works at Novi? You know, what are we talking about here? You know, is she happy? Is she sad? Is she raising five children without a husband? Or does she have a husband who's a lawyer and they have 2.5 children, who one is in Harvard and one is in Stanford? What are we talking about?
I love it, because you really are bringing the true diversity of the black community, and you're really breaking the stereotypical, you know, angry black woman, deadbeat dad, alcoholic, you know, not at home, single. You're just breaking all of those stereotypes and showing the realness of the black community. You know, there are some two parent households, you know,
there are some educated.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love it. You know, and we, you know, try to do this. And my job is, when I did my artist statement, which was so hard for me to do because I didn't know you were supposed to have an artist statement. I'm a writer. I thought artist statements were for artists, you know, people that were painting pictures. And so it took me a minute, and I said, okay, you know, what do you do? You know, I write stories because I remember those days when we sat on the front porch on the steps when you had to be quiet when grown folks were talking about things that were going on, and they could solve. They need to go back to that because there are some folks I know that could sit on that porch and solve the world's problems. But we have to let that keep going. Yeah, we have to keep, you know, we have to let that keep going because, and we need to tell our stories because we have to tell our stories not only generation to generation, but we have to tell them from heart to heart and from soul to soul so that we can, you know, so that we can keep our, you know, keep us alive without watering down who we are. And that's kind of how I write, how I take, you know, I take a spin on looking around and see all the different faces and the different phases that African American people have now.
I love that. I wanted to kind of chime in a little bit or throw something out there because I know stereotypes. They not only come from outside the community, they come in from inside the community and passed on by things we say and everything else so that when there's someone that is different from the stereotype you think something's wrong with them. And I say all that to say I think that's one of the reasons why it's more popular to portray the angry black woman because that's
that
a stereotype
way.
even within the community that we perpetuate ourselves.
And that's because we don't have a heightened vision of who we really are, you know, at the core of the black community and our history in this country. And so we take on those things that have been projected onto us by other people sometimes or by us because, you know, we have to have – if you're a strong black woman, you know, what's the you earn the money, you buy the bacon, you fry it, and then you go plant some tomatoes. You just do everything. And we need to get out of the stereotype because I need to be able to tell you sometimes, hey, I'm tired.
Exactly.
Okay. And today I need to be able to tell you something like, okay, yes, I know I love my children, love with all my heart, but right now I need Big Mama, somebody come and get these kids out of this house.
Right.
I need to go take a bath. You know, I need to be able to tell you that I'm mad and how mad I am without you trying to tell me how I need to be politically correct.
Right.
You need to understand I can tell you often, and I have a poison tongue. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I just happen to have one. And I can tell you off, I never raise my voice, never change my tone, and never say a cuss word. But you leave me looking for a Band-Aid.
Yes, that's my kind of talking.
And so you know, we're just so different kinds of people. You know, and then there's those of us that are such peacemakers. We know we've been over backwards and tie ourselves in a knot to try to keep peace in our families and everything else. And sometimes you can't tell by the face that you see. When we did a play about domestic violence last year, I think. But it's, you know, and we try to, especially in our community, we have this thing, and I have heard more elder people tell it to younger women. That, okay, if he's not hitting you, he's not abusing you. If you have a house to go to at the end of the day, you don't have anything to complain about. If you have food on the table, you should be happy. So there's some single women struggling. Yes, there is, but when he calls me the B word, when he talks down to me, when he takes the Bible and tries to beat me to death with the Bible, when he locks up all the money so I can't get to it, I have to ask him for $5 to put into the gas tank when I work a 40-hour-a-week job.
Jesus.
There are all kinds of ways that you can be abused. So it's like, you know, we need to get that. One of the ladies that attended the play, I think she said she was 76. And she said, ma'am, let me tell you something. My whole life, you know, my dad used to tell us the same thing. Hey, he's not beating you. What are you complaining about? She said, I never knew those things were considered abuse. They told us that's just the way marriage works.
Wow. Wow.
And it's sad, like you said, generation to generation. Yeah. That's what we told. Because we're living, and most of us are living paycheck to paycheck. No, you don't want anybody to call the police on Rashid because your rent is $1,500 a month. He pays $800 of that. If you put Rashid in jail, he doesn't have a job anymore. Where am I getting that $800 to make up the difference? I mean, be real.
And
you know, they talk about
the name of that place.
Yes, you do need to tell. But, you know, let's be real. This is the kind of thing that happens. This is what we have to deal with. And in the current climate, you have to be leery about calling the police anyway. Yes, I know police listen, but that's okay. I say it anyway. Call them because you want to make sure that when Rodney, he gets out of jail, it's not because they're going to throw dirt on him. Because that's a very real fear for us. That's a very real fear for us. What image do you want your children to have of their dad? Yes, you know, he shouldn't be saying that and doing that in front of your kids. And a lot of times we don't process that. Kids don't pay attention to what you say. Kids pay attention to what you do.
Right.
So
when
Shekinah sees daddy calling you that name, talking about how stupid you are, talking about all these other things. So when she gets 15 and Jamal starts telling her those things about her, when he's pulling off, just tapping her forehead, the girl, you so silly. Oh, God, go sit down. And now when she's 28 and he's throwing her head against the wall, you stupid. She's already been conditioned that's an okay thing to do. That's part of having a man.
Jesus. LaVon, I hope you have a question lined up because Jeanette then left me over here speechless. I just...
I'm saying
if I'm talking too much, just tell me to slow down.
No.
Slow down and walk.
I mean, I think for anyone that's listening that wanted to fully understand the creative activist, I think you just summed it all up because you are being that voice for the people and you bring in the realness because, like you said, so much of what you're saying is like hitting home and there's probably people listening, you know, in the audience that's listening and are thinking, oh, my gosh, wow. You know, why haven't anyone said that? Because we have lived those generational, you know, stereotypes and curses that we're holding on to because we're thinking it's better to have a piece of a man than to have
my whole being.
Mm-hmm. And to be whole and complete within myself. So I think you've just really solidified for us activists because you are truly being that voice, you know, that voice of reasoning, that voice of hope, that voice of knowledge, that voice of understanding, of wisdom. So I'm like Valencia. I'm just sitting here like speechless because it has to be hard. How do you get the courage or where does your courage come from to be that voice? Because it can be hard to really be real, to show these real stories and to portray this. How do you get where your courage?
I think it comes from living. Almost every character I write, there's a little bit of me somewhere in there. It's either me or somebody in my family, somebody I know. So I've seen how that plays out. I've seen, you know, I've lived through some of that playing out. Okay, so it's not just about saving me. At some point, we have to get out of the me syndrome. And it's not just about saving me, because if I can save me and then I can save you, then you can save LaVon, then LaVon can save Susie, then Susie can save Anita. Anita can then save somebody else, and pretty soon we got a movement.
That
gives courage to someone else to do it.
Right. Have you ever had anyone that you know see one of your productions and say, hey, was that about me?
Well,
have you
ever
had that
happen? Say that all the time.
You know, like somebody, you know, like your third cousin.
All the time. You know, my cousin Shirley, she was in the same thing. Did you know how she was married to Joe? No, I don't know Shirley or Joe. Now, you know, I don't know Bill. I said, but I can tell you, I write about life, and what I know for sure is life happens to us all. Mm. And so, no, I didn't know. I had one lady tell me that she was going to talk to her lawyer because what I wrote would hit so close to home, she thought I had stolen her story.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, it made me do something I should have been doing. It made me put the disclaimer in the front, you know, that everybody here is fictional. I'm not, you know, there's no one real living or dead, you know, that I'm talking about in these plays. They're all created characters. But a lot of them, you know, some of them come out, and it's one of my favorite stories is once this lady, we were rehearsing, and she came in out of the rain. And I kept looking because I was trying to figure out why she was in there. She said, it was cold and it was raining, lady. I'm not trying to see your show. And she was very, very aggressive. And so I said, okay. So I just turned around and we just kept rehearsing. And then the next week she just stopped in for a minute because it was raining again. And she said, I'm not here. I said, that's fine. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. But she said, I might, you know, if I'm free that night, I may try to come by and see it. Okay, well, that's fine. We'd love to have you. And so I didn't think any more about her. You know, people say that all the time. And so we did the show, and after it was over, we were striking the set, and I looked back, and she was standing kind of in the middle of the room. And I was like, oh. And so I walked back. She said, I told you I'd try to come. I said, well, I'm glad you did. She said, well, let me tell you something, lady. I don't know you, and you don't know me, right?
Right.
5 years ago, my daughter and I had a big argument during Thanksgiving. We both said some things we probably shouldn't have. But since that time, we stopped talking. She lives 200 miles from here. No Christmas cards, no birthdays, no grandkids parties. No, she doesn't talk to me. I don't talk to her. That's the way it's been. I don't even know what we really thought about that Thanksgiving. But she pointed me and said, you know what? I said, I know it's late. It's almost 10 o'clock, but I'm getting ready to go home and call my daughter.
Wow.
I said, and that made me cry. That made me cry. Because to me, the play was not that kind of impactful.
Oh,
and so, and that lets you know that stories let you know that different people are in different places.
Mm-hmm.
And being in different places, you know, means their reaction to things are going to be different. What they've lived through is going to take them to a different place that maybe you would have ended up given that same set of circumstances. And she said, yeah. She said, I'm going to go call my daughter. I was like, oh, wow. Like, Okay, because I'm thinking that my play is just something for you to come out and have a good time at, and then you go home, and nothing really happens. You know what I mean? Nothing really happens. You had a good time. You went out, maybe you had dinner or whatever. And when she said that, that just stuck with me. I didn't ask her, you know, what part of the play did that? I know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
What character, you know, made you think you needed to go do that or? You know, was there a particular line? And she just left, and I've never seen her. I'm just assuming I've never seen her since that time.
Do you
but
ever
that is,
replay
that's always
that?
Stuck with me.
Do you ever replay that in your mind, trying to figure out what part of the play, you know, like what caused that action?
I did.
Wow.
I just couldn't figure out what it was. Nothing to me was strong enough to make her want to make that move. I said maybe she was already leaning that way, and something she saw just kind of pushed her, you know, on over to, you know, to calling her daughter, or maybe somebody, one of the actresses, maybe reminded her of her daughter, or you know, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Wow.
I don't know what triggered that. But you know, but we get that all the time. You know, that happened to me. The one that we always laugh at is that we did one because I do domestic violence. I do everything, and so the guy was beating his wife, and you know, one of the ladies started up. So when we turned the lights off, she started screaming, "Turn the lights on! Turn the lights on! He's beating her!" And so I'm like, "No, it's a play.
Oh wow!
He's not doing that." And then a lady told me like 6 months later, we had a wedding. She said, I need to tell you something. No, when we went to that play, that tall guy, I remember him. She said, when he started beating that girl, and I don't think I'm stupid. I'm not stupid. I knew it was a play. But when I looked at him beating her, it gave me a flashback to my first husband and how he used to beat me when we were married. And so that was when I was in my 20s. She said, and I started patting around in my purse to see if I had my pistol with me.
Jeez.
Oh my gosh.
And I I said, no, sweetie, it was a play. It was a play. I know. I know. I don't know what that was about. I just know that when he started doing that, it was like I flashed back and I looked at him and I saw my ex-husband's face, and I just started feeling around in my purse, thinking, oh, no, not again.
Okay. Oh, wow. But I think people underestimate the power of the written word, much less, you know, when you turn that written word into a stage play. So when you think about, did you always intend to write plays, or did you write books and write plays, or like how did that process, you know, was that something you did as a young lady, or, you know, what was your process?
That was cathartic. I used to have a lot of issues, and my way of dealing with them, since I didn't have anybody to talk to, was to write plays. Now, at the time, I didn't know I was writing a play. I'm thinking I'm writing a story. But I'm writing, though. He said this, then she said that, then he threw the pot, and that's what I'm writing. And so we were in school, and one of my civics teacher, when I got to class, he said, I need that yellow one, because I was writing in a legal pad. I still like to write out pen and paper. And he said, for what? And he said, no, he said, every time I see you, I said, I didn't write on it in class. He said, no, I'm not saying that. What I'm trying to say is that you're so intense when you're writing, I just want to see what it is that you're writing. And so he took it, and at the end of school, he told me to come back and get it. And I went back, and before he gave it to me, you know, he handed it to me, and he kind of pulled it back. He said, who did you copy this from? Oh. And I was like, I didn't copy it from anybody. No, so you seriously said, you're not in trouble. Just tell me, you know, who did you copy this from? I said, you just said you saw me writing all the time. You had to see I wasn't copying anything.
Oh, wow.
And so he said, well, I said, I'll tell you what you do. If you can find the kids to perform in this play, I will stay after school and let you use my room to rehearse, and then let you put on the show and invite other students to come see it. And I was like, wow. And we had a little band come in. We had some guys that we went to school with, they played guitar, and we had them bring their stuff. And I feel, if Earlene Irby is anywhere where she can hear my voice, I would love for her to contact me, because she, and I know Aretha Franklin just died, and she was probably 4'10". She had really bold legs. If she straightened up her legs, she was probably 5'9". And she was really quiet in school. But she came out, and she wanted to participate. And I'm like, okay, what can we get her to do? I can sing. All right. And we think, okay, you're not in the choir. I know, but I can sing. And so we decided, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to get the record, we're going to put it on, and we're just going to turn the volume up loud and let her listen. So we turn on Respect. And we turn, and she said, turn up louder. I want to say, louder? She said, you can turn up a little bit louder. I did. When I tell you, she blew everybody out of that room. She danced across the stage. She did her dips and trips and stuff. And her voice, my God. Even the teacher said, how did that voice come out of that little body? It was just amazing. It was just amazing. And I know. And I've written over 130 plays, but I can still remember the name of that play, which is something that's almost similar to what I wrote a few years ago, because that play was called When All Men Will Be Brothers.
Oh, wow.
And it was about, you know, gangs, you know, and black guys killing, you know, beating up and killing each other at that age. And then, you know, a few years ago I wrote Don't Call Me Brother, which is about Black Lives Matter, but it's from a policeman's perspective. But yeah, it's an interesting journey, and when people tell me that they can't write, I'm always like, I don't understand, because I can't not write. So I don't know, when people tell me that they can't, I don't understand.
Yes,
because my mind is never still. There's never a time when I can't do a story.
Wow.
When you're getting ready to go,
go ahead. So when was it that you first produce your, like, first, quote-unquote, like, stage play, like it was on a stage outside the classroom.
Stage. Now, when I did it outside of the church, because I did it for years with the church, with youth department, then finally with adults. And so finally when there was a shift in the direction that the church was going, the way that I wrote was no longer needed. And while I was upset at the time, my husband and my mother told me at the same time, no, you've been stopped from doing plays at church. You have not been stopped from doing plays. And God wouldn't have given you a gift to shortchange it like that. And so I just went out. I said, you know, you're right. And I went. I had no idea what I was going at doing at the time. I went to another theater. I said, okay, I already have the script. I'll take my script. God, I need a theater. I said, okay, I need some people to act in this. Let me go call some people that went the first time, fill in with some other people I don't know. Let's get a little music going in the background. Okay, I need somebody that can work the lights, somebody that can work the sound. Oh, I need to get some microphones. And we did it. And I've always done things inside the church, so I'm doing something on my own for the very first time. And because I'm working out of anger, whatever it is, I was too proud to ask anybody for help. I just did it. And so I was thinking, okay, I don't know. And then the fear sets in, okay? You have all this stuff. And, okay, how do you get people to come and see this play? And I'm thinking, oh, gosh, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? So I went back to the people that had participated in church and said, oh, yeah, we'll come to that. Like, okay, but I need more people than that. And so I honestly don't know how it, well, God made it happen. But we sold out of that performance 2 weeks before the show opened.
Wow.
Which is unheard of for a new show and a new playwright.
That's amazing.
I couldn't believe it. And people were calling me, we need tickets, I don't have any. Okay, well, I only need three. I don't have any. Okay, well, what if you just give me two? Okay, I said, I'm not trying to build up the hype because I didn't know how to hold that comp ticket. I didn't know
right.
any of that. And so I just sold all the tickets. I just sold them all. And they were like, okay, well, you got it. I said, people came in and there were people. And I forgot to tell the people, the ushers on the door, that, you know, you can't, you know, they're fire code, so you can't allow, you know, you can only allow the people that have tickets, you know, that have,
right,
get in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they started paying cash coming to the door. And
oh
so
my
they,
God.
Said, okay, you're, they came and said, okay, you're in violation of the code. I said, I'm in violation of what? And she said, look. And so I went back and I looked out. There were people standing along the wall. There were people sitting on the steps. And I was like, oh, my God. Okay. And so we said, okay, you guys have to move. You can't be on the steps. You cannot be sitting on the steps. The fire marshal will come in here and find us for days. And they got up and they moved. And I said, okay, that took care of that. And she came back about an hour. They're back on the steps. Like, oh, God. I said, I don't know. I said, well, my thought was, okay, the play will be over in 20 minutes. Unless the fire marshal gets here in those 20 minutes, I'm not going to worry about it.
Right.
So I just let them. I just let it keep rolling, and it worked out fine. It worked out fine. But the part that I know was God, we got to intermission, and I'm thinking, okay, everything's great. This is my first time out. You know, my friends are calling me tomorrow. How's it going? Oh, it's going great. And the lady comes. We didn't hear it outside, but said there was a horrible thunderstorm that had knocked out the transformers, and they came in at intermission. And the lady at the theater said, okay, I've just talked to the director. She says you have to clear the theater. I'm sorry? She says you have to clear the theater. Why? She said, and so she took me out. So the wind was blowing so hard when she unlatched the back door, it threw it against the metal rail.
Wow.
I was like, oh, my God. She said, and then the lights went out. And we're sitting there, said, no air conditioning. I'm in Texas. No air conditioning. No lights. And I had been at Fry's earlier today, and they had these little cute 3-inch mint green flashlights. And I just thought they were so cute. I said, I picked up a couple because they were 99 cents, and the spirit said, get some more. So I just went and grabbed up an armful of them and got to the checkout. Darn, I didn't get batteries. Well, I don't need them right now. I'm not going to worry about it. And so we got there, and I looked at the bag of flashlights. I said, why didn't you get batteries? And one of the crew said, your husband said that he had stopped by CVS and he had bought a big family pack of batteries and they'll fit into these flashlights that he did not know I had bought. He didn't know I had bought those flashlights. And he came back, and so I dealt with that. We prayed, and the girl said, ma'am, you're going to have to clear the theater. She said, there's no other choice. I said, yeah, there is one. And she said, you're going to have to give him back the money and let him go. I said, okay, hold on. If they can see, said, well, we don't want anybody tripping. I said, but if we can get light. She said, but the lights are out. If we can get light, can we go on?
Wow.
Well, yes, but you have to get the audience to agree. And so I took a deep breath and I said, okay, I just want to, and I never like to speak in front of people. And I just said, okay, this is the deal. There's a lightning storm out there. It's knocked out the transformer. Okay, we don't have lights. We don't have air conditioning. We have no idea. They said it may not come back on until morning. I said, but what we have a lot of flashlights here that we can provide light. If you need to get to the restroom, us just will get you to the restroom. And we have enough flashlights. You're going to put them on both sides of the stage and flash them onto the stage to show you what's happening on stage. But for any of you who do not want to stay, we will refund your money and let you go. Now, out of all those people there, we had 3 people leave.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, that's God. Yeah, that's God showing me that it's not about me.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I said, okay. And we got through it. We got everybody out of there. We went upstairs, and as soon as the last person got upstairs to the foyer, the lights came back on.
Yes, indeed.
God has a way of showing himself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was it, because I was sitting there like, oh, my God, I can't send all this. I got to pay for this. I can't send, give you the money back. And it was just like, okay. Okay, and so then after that, we just kept going with the next play, and everything kind of has a theme, I really promote a lot of issues. We did the Silent City, which is domestic abuse in the church, where we sometimes like see and don't see, or see and pretend like we don't see, and we've done so, and they come out, which is good. They've been very. Supportive, so I'm thankful for that. And then eventually I got the courage to submit to the festival. And so I'm only going to do Black Festival. So I did the DC Black Theater Festival and the Atlanta Black Theater Festival and got picked up for both.
Wow.
And then won. And then won.
So to kind of talk about ABTF, Atlanta Black Theater Festival, let's talk about Clean Sheets. Just because they don't talk about it doesn't make it a secret about Clean Sheets.
Clean Sheets, and I'm going to tell you, we've done readings on that, and I'm going to tell you what's said about it. Every time I start telling somebody what the story is about, invariably they say, okay, every black family has one of those. And I said, okay, so what do we do about nothing? We just don't go over there. I said, okay, so what happens if they tell Valencia, okay, when Uncle Henry's over there by himself, you don't go over there. They don't tell you why. They just tell you don't go over there. If his wife's not home. And then they tell me, don't go over there if his wife's not home. My mama or whoever tells me. But say they forget to tell LaVonne. Or LaVonne's a friend from school, and she comes down the street, and she's looking for Valencia. And Uncle Henry's on the porch.
Mm.
And she's like, is Valencia over here? Yeah, she's back, going in. And then he follows her in. And then he does what men like Uncle Henry do. And then when LaVonne comes back and she needs to tell somebody what happened, we tell her, but he's well-respected. He's the breadwinner in the family. You know, this would kill his wife if she found out about that. And what about his kids? Do you know how bad that they're going to feel? And nobody in the family is going to like you anymore if you do this. And unfortunately, that's the conversation that you will hear.
Yeah.
That generation, that is the conversation that the person who's been victimized will hear as their script flips. Now, you are no longer the victim, but you are the one who is trying to victimize the family.
Mm. Yep. Hashtag amen.
Yes.
And so that's what we did with Clean Sheets. Okay, let's start ripping some of these band-aids off. Because just because we don't discuss it, it doesn't mean that people don't know.
Yeah.
That's true.
When you go up to the old man's house in that curb up there and you go in there and stay for 2 hours and they know he's single and they know you're 14, they have an idea what's happening in that house.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not going to tell. They'll talk to each other about it, but they're not going to do anything to stop it. You hear, well, she didn't have no business going in there. It's okay, she's 14, so then what?
Yep.
She drives a car at 14 and she has a wreck and kills herself where she should have died because she shouldn't have been driving the car?
Mm. Mm. Wow.
Is that our thought process? You do what you're not supposed to do, and so whatever happens to you is okay? It doesn't work like that. It shouldn't work like that. And that's what we have to get over. You know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so in the play, the main character goes home for a funeral, and the biggest decision she has to make, and I'm just kind of just reading over some different things and notes I have about the play, is, you know, whether she wants to deal with it or not. And I think a lot of times, you know, like it says, you know, just because they don't talk about it doesn't make it a secret. And I know, and I'm like 100% sure that 99.9% of the people I know can say the same. We all know that. We all know that thing that happens or goes on when you're a kid, or you know that when you're a kid, and then when you get older, you know, it, especially if you like me, okay, and then you say, well, hold on, X, Y, and Z happened, and y'all knew, then it's like, oh, girl, forget about that. And I'm speaking of personal experience, because when I had the audacity to write a few things in one of my books, you know, a lot of my family decided not to, you know, they had feelings about it or whatever else. So just because you're mad about it don't make it not be true.
Yeah, it's more about the embarrassment.
Right. Right.
And it's like they don't think about who the victim is, who the real victim is. To them, mm-hmm. No, you're hurting the whole family because you told. But you get around to, okay, but what about my hurt? Because it's quite as like it has to go somewhere. You don't just get hurt like that and it just disappears. Okay, it's been 4 weeks. You don't think about it anymore. It's not that you scraped your knee and it's going to heal and there may be a little scar. This happens inside of you. And like anything else, if you don't treat it the way it needs to be treated, it will not heal. So you're going to live a lifetime with a scab that could have been a scar 20 years ago.
Wow.
As you wrote Clean Sheets, because I know sometimes as a writer, and I love both fiction, nonfiction, sci-fi, any area of writing and different things like that, but as you write a character, you immerse yourself into that character. So did you find yourself going through the emotions, the hurt, the pain, the anger,
the crying,
that
the
character
crying,
was,
the
yeah.
anger, the wishing that he was here so I could punch him in the throat? Yes.
See, I wasn't going to say that part.
That
thank
part.
You for saying that for me. That part.
That part.
Yeah, and then you get upset because you're looking around at people that you know knew, and it's like, okay, you were an adult. You were supposed to be my protector.
Mm.
That's what you were supposed to do. But now you want to tell me to forget it or act like it never happened.
Yeah.
Or just but you internalize it, and it has to go somewhere. And it's like in the place. It's coming out somewhere. It's going to come out with drugs. It's going to come out in drink. It's going to come out with aggression. It's going to come out sexually.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of ways that it's coming out.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's coming out.
That
to
bring, I was going to say it's going to bring a lot of healing and open up, hopefully, a lot of discussions. Because when we talk about, generational curses and blessings, sometimes the blessings come because the curses are hidden or swept up under the rug or an outcast.
That's what people don't understand. It's going to hurt. It's not going to, I'm going to tell this and I'm going to exhale. And, oh, God, okay, now I feel so much better. No, there's going to be some pain. There's going to be some pain. And probably not just you, but there. In order for you to heal, there has to be some pain, because you now have to open that scab. You can't start from the place where the scab has kind of healed over. Okay, we're going to start from that day. No, you have to go from what caused the scab.
Yes.
That's where you have to start. So you go back to where that is, and then sometimes you have to look at it, because we don't even associate some of the things that we do as adults with what happened to us when we were children.
Mm-hmm.
You've been mistreated all the time you were little, but now that you're 25, 30, you want to fight everybody. Anybody says the wrong thing, they're going to get cuffed out and pushed out.
I know some people may be listening in that right now probably like, yep, that's G-Baby. I don't want to say that's my alter ego, but that's who I used to be, because it's easier to display anger than anything, than hurt. And so, anger is easy, and I could swing with the best of them, and it was easier for me to be angry and swing than to deal with the fact that, and I'm just talking about my own personal feelings and things. It was easier for me to deal with that than deal with the fact that I felt guilty for letting somebody victimize me. So now
exactly.
I'm going to have, so that in a way to, quote unquote, take my power back, I'm swinging on everything moving. Thank God I grew from that.
Some of us are still a work in progress, but
I don't even know what to say, LaVon.
but that's how it is. Because they used to talk about how mean I am, and if I tell somebody that now, they're like, no. Oh, honey, I made up cuss words. I didn't just say the ones that were out there. I made up words, to get you to back up off of me. You need to go somewhere and sit down. You think you're too big for me? Okay, let me show you. I'm going to go put some salt and some pepper in my hand, and when I throw it in your eyes and you start grabbing your eyes, and I can sit somewhere else. Okay, let me stop, because I don't give anybody any ideas. But anyway.
I need to, class is in session, because I need to write that down just in case.
Oh, gosh.
I'm being good. I'm being good. But y'all know I take all kind of self-defense and kickboxing and stuff like that. I ain't learned that in class.
This is a mock class that we teach. just in case you got a minute.
But the good thing is we can laugh, and joke about this now, because we've grown, and some of us are in that process. But for that person that may be watching your playing that has not, gotten to that place where they're, they've come to terms with it,
and they, like the woman you stated before, have that flashback. And mm-hmm. now they're left with sitting there with these emotions. Do you offer, or what do you have to say to them, you know, that there you have to deal with this? Like you say, you can't just allow that pain to go on. You have to go back to those repressed memories. What do you share? Do you
okay,
offer?
And there are several ways. Yeah, one, we tell you, there is absolutely, in fact, I don't know how we can stress this enough. There is absolutely nothing wrong with seeking professional help. Mm. Nothing wrong. Seek out, find someone that you can deal with on the level that you know that you're compatible. There's nothing wrong with that. Seek out, and if you can't, if you're not that far along that you can actually make that step, what I would suggest, and I'm by no means a therapist or anything, but I found that this can sometimes start that therapeutic wheel turning. Write a letter to yourself as you were at the time the transgression happened, and write a letter to the other person, whether they're living or dead. Write a letter to the person who violated you, telling them what them violating you did to you.
Oh, wow.
Because sometimes just that's getting it out starts it. You know, it starts the process. Mm-hmm. But we've been conditioned to say, okay, I don't want to talk about it. But then you can see other things happen to other people. Like, you know, there was a guy in our neighborhood that we knew was a pedophile. We didn't know it was a pedophile. We just know he liked to mess with young kids. And mm-hmm. you could tell when he moved on to his next victim because he would start buying gifts.
Wow.
Mm.
So, you know, when you see Susie and Susie's got the little cute necklace that probably didn't cost her $5, but to Susie, that's, oh, wow, isn't that pretty? Where'd you get it? Oh, he said he saw it. He just thought of me.
Mm.
Okay. Which is where our parents get don't accept gifts.
Yeah.
Wow. Don't accept gifts. Oh, he's going to take you school shopping. I know your mama's money is tight, but I'm gonna take you and buy you some clothes, and you can just tell her that you put them in the layaway and you use your babysitting money to get them out. Second clue, if they tell you you have to lie to your parents, you already know. Break camp.
Wow.
You know, they're just things that we know that we need to look for. When you see them, oh, yeah, and when that one's the always one that they have to make a comment to. And you know it, but it's like we don't want to say anything because we don't want to rock the boat. You know, suppose that's the benefactor of the family. You know, when your car note is due, you can get money from him. Our utility is getting ready to go off, or somebody needs a prescription filled. This is a person because they have the money. So we don't want to make them mad. The family depends on them. But what you don't realize you're saying in that same breath is, so we're going to allow her to be sacrificed so that we can keep our money bank going.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't think of it that way. We're big on, well, what happens in our house stays in our house. And no, we don't be telling stories out of school. But, okay, let's stop that lie because we tell everything else.
Huh. That's the truth.
You're going to tell
Facebook
that you saw Cyril
everything?
And Mona at the no-tell motel. You're going to say that the church cut the pastor an extra $500 check. You're going to tell everything else there is to tell. So why not that?
Wow.
Those things usually don't hurt anybody, but that. What about that? Because every time that you violate a child, and I know that a therapist may not agree with me, but trust me on this one, every single time a child is violated, there's a part of them that dies that they will not get back. Yes, they can get therapy and learn how to deal with it, but they don't get that back.
Amen.
Why do you guys have me talking so much?
No.
Wow.
I think this is class decision. You teach it. You teach it because it's what.
It's real.
Yeah, and it's what the audience you know, needs to hear, you know, which is one of the reasons why, you know, we discuss certain topics or even bring other people on, because this is the story of so many people, whether it happened to them or somebody they know. These are things that need to be discussed. And I love the fact that, you know, you had the audacity. How dare you expose something that happens every day? You know, and I love that you are the queen creative activist. See, I put queen on it.
I was going to say, okay, but wait, now she gave me a title.
Yes. Have a title, like, it's, but it's serious discussion. And I don't know for Queen LaVon, but I know for me, definitely everything that you've said, and I've shared this before, because I feel like it's quote unquote strong and brave as people see me or whatever have you, for me to be honest about my experiences with being violated as a child or my experience with being in domestic violence. Like, when I realized that this wasn't my baggage to carry, shame on you for having done this to me, and I gave it a voice, it really helps other people, you know, and for them
there are some people that are too scared to open up, and the fact that you did, they can look at you and say, okay, well, she, not only did she open up, but look at her. She's still whole. She's still making moves. She's still a strong woman. Yes, she may have gotten knocked down, but she got the best definition for success is you get up one more time and you fall down.
And pick
if
up
you can
some
do that,
salt
you
and
succeeded.
Pepper.
So pick
on your
up
way
salt
up.
And pepper while you're getting up.
I'll see what you done started.
We might have to edit that out.
You done started with her.
You know, look, I'm going to be, it's going to be shows to come a month down the line. Wait till I see you in person. I promise I'm going to have a salt and pepper shaker with your name engraved on it for you to, and it's going to say Define You Radio on the other side.
I got a lot of things that they thought that was a horrible thing for me to do. Well, I thought what he did was horrible, but you didn't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna start walking around.
I had to step up for myself.
Yeah. And I love that. I want to talk about with clean sheets, because it's a staged reading, and Miss Tony talked about that last week. So if you could tell us a little bit about that and how we can see it, because it will be at Atlanta Black Theater Festival. So tell us a little bit about the staged reading of Clean Sheets.
Okay, now the staged reading means that I call it putting legs on it. You know, you don't just write the end and then throw it on the stage. So it's kind of workshopped, and you revise it, and you get to the point where, okay, now it is something that people can see. So a stage reading at the base level is simply a developmental process. Okay, you know, I've looked at it, I read it, I've done that, I've sent it to you, you looked at it, you know, you had some input, you know, I may or may not take what you said, go back, revise it some more, drop it for a minute, let it breathe, come back and look at it, see if I have any other ideas about it, maybe get a few friends together in a room to just kind of go over it to see where I'm not reading, where it's somebody else reading so I can hear it. Some playwrights like to just read it out loud. Now, that's a good way to catch grammatical errors, but for me it's not so much a great way to catch story flow. So, get a box of Popeye's chicken and with some mashed potatoes or whatever and make some red Kool-Aid. Whatever your beverage of choice is, it's totally up to you. Just don't let them drink too much before they read. And then just let them read the script, and you listen. You sit back, and you don't talk. You don't explain if there's something that they question or they don't understand. You know, you write those things down because you need to think about it now. So is that a hole, or is it a perception issue for them? And so you need to go back and you kind of, you know, you're still stirring the pot. You're still stirring the pot. Okay, so after that, then you would go and you would have a table read. Now, some people call that chicken thing a table read, but I do a more structured table read where I'm going to call in some actors. You're going to sit around the table, and I'm going to sit back, and I'm going to listen to the actors read, one, because they're going to probably read it with more voice inflection. I'm going to give them an idea of who each of the characters are and their personality so they can kind of put that in the way they read. And then I'm going to listen. Then I'm going to have them ask me a question. Okay, what about the story flow? Is there a hole in there? Is there any place in there where it didn't really make sense or it didn't connect? Or, you know, or what you tell me what you think the story is about, because almost everything has to have a thing. So you tell me what the story is about, because now if you wrote a play about the resurrection and everybody at the table tells you they're thinking snow and Christmas, you got a problem.
Yeah,
and you need to go back and fix that. So now when you get all those little holes plugged, now you can go out and put it in front of an audience that you don't know. And it, even though you do want to have some friends there, to me it's better if they don't know you. They may not even know your work. And now you put what you normally see at a stage reading is you're going to see people dressed in black, sitting on the stage, straight line, music standing in front of them with the script, and they're reading from the script. And they will have voice inflection. And it's not a dry read. They will have voice inflection. You will have a narrator who's reading the directions. So, you know, it may be that it starts off where Valencia and LeBron are talking, and they talk for a while, then the narrator would come in and say, and now John is entering the room with a bunch of bags, and he drops them. So that we know now John is in the room, and Valencia is saying, oh, you're making a mess, that she's not talking to LeBron, she's talking to John. So, you know, you have someone who reads those directions, so it's clear what's happening, because you're not seeing it. But now the great thing is if the stage reading is done right, you don't know that you're not seeing a play. You're going to get involved in that story, and you're going to follow the story. You're not going to follow the third person from the left in black or the guy, second guy from the end. You're not going to think like that. You're going to say, ooh, look what John, ooh, John, ooh. Oh, wow, did you see Valencia? She was crying. Yeah, I would have cried too.
That ugly cry.
That Mahalia Jackson monkey cry. I kind of take it a little bit further. I like for my stage readings for the people to dress as their character. So if you're the first lady in the play, then you are dressed to the nines. You've got your head tilted at a 30, 70 degree angle. You've got your makeup on, your earrings. And as you read, we see that. We see that you're the first lady. If you Rashid and you a street hustler, we're going to see that you're wearing that cap backwards on your head. You got the gold in your mouth or whatever. You got your T-shirt on and you got the baggy pants. We see that's who you are. So when you're reading, you need to make sure you're reading to reflect what you look like. Vice versa, you need to look like what you're reading. You know, when you're reading. And sometimes when I get really, really lucky, I have a cast who learns their lines. And they keep telling me to stop saying this, but I like it, so I say it because I'm a writer. It's my stuff. I can call it what I want to call it. I call it a dramatized stage reading where they don't need those notebooks. They don't need a set, but they're going to walk around and they're going to act it out without the set.
Yes.
So that you get a feel for, yes, you can follow the story, but you can also get a feel for what it would look like had it been actually put on the stage.
Okay. I'm excited. I'm ready.
And now I get to tell you, and there's a big twist at the end.
Man. Y'all got an exclusive.
You got an exclusive, yes.
I'm excited to definitely see it and experience it, and probably, you know, as it's being, you know, read on stage, so to speak, I will have a mango, frozen mango margarita, and some Popeyes, Shannon, if you're listening. I will have my card and get ready to do my ugly cry.
Oh, yeah.
So to get
But there's a lot of fun in it, too. I mean, it's not all bad. There's a lot of fun in it, too. So, to get the tickets, you go
I'll
to
be
the
ABC.
Yeah,
I'll be laughing
oh, yeah.
in between my
yeah,
ugly cries.
There's one of the reasons that we can't let kids in is because one of the reasons you'll be laughing.
Oh, okay.
But you have to come to see it to understand that.
I'm gonna be there. I will be there, and I know Shannon plans on coming, and we're gonna LaVon coming. That's not a question.
Lord, I'm like, how can I
take one of those days and go sit down and talk about it? And I'm gonna have a talk back. We're gonna have a talk back after it's over, where we talk about, you know, the theme of the show and, you know, how would you handle it in your family, or do you have issues like that in your family? And if so, has it been difficult in bringing them to the forefront, or are you like most of us where, you know, we make amends for what happens? Mm-hmm. Because in this particular one, the uncle and the aunt pay for the college educations of all the nieces. So you don't have to worry about applying for grants. You don't have to worry about anything else. They make sure that you have some place to stay, something to eat, and that your education is paid for, which is a wonderful blessing to have when you come from a family that doesn't have a lot of money.
And all it costs you is your peace of mind and your innocence.
And that's what you deal with. But the cost of that education is not the dollars that have accumulated after 4 or 5 years, because some of them, they got MBAs.
Wow.
But there's a price. There used to be an acronym. It was TNSTAFL, I think, which is something that used to say years ago so that you would understand. It just simply means there's no such thing as a free lunch.
If
somebody's taking you someplace to do something for you, they're going to want something in return.
Exactly.
Jesus. Well, Miss
Jeanette, you gave us an earful tonight.
I think I've said Jesus more on this show than any other show. What you think, Queen LaVon?
Yes.
Yes.
I believe so.
I was going to say, I'm going to have to come back and talk about the play because we didn't get it. We got to it.
I know, and I'm really, really excited to see it. It's like when you talk about something that's coming up, you don't know, like, how much to put out there. Of course, all the information will be posted on Define You Radio's page, but I definitely suggest to the audience that you get your tickets to Atlanta Black Theater Festival and see the stage reading of Clean Sheets.
And as much as we've told, there's still so much that hasn't. We gave anything away.
Yeah. It's going to be something to see. I'm going to have to talk to Tony and see if we could do a live show. I'll Facebook Live and live, all the way live.
I'll tell you, some of the actors have told me already, can you get some therapists to be in the audience?
Wow.
And I said, well, I don't know any therapists in Atlanta, but we can certainly make sure there's some information or something that's around there.
Yeah.
So.
Now, Miss Jeanette, quick question, because sometimes people that's listening live to the show will inbox us during the show or text, and one of the listeners want to know, are you from Austin?
Yes.
Okay.
Not originally, but I've been here long enough that I've been told by my Austinite husband. That when people ask me, am I from Texas, Austin, Texas, the answer is yes.
Okay. Thank you for answering that.
But my people in Ohio get mad, and they're like, okay. But I am a Texan. I vote here. I live here. I'm a Texan.
Okay. I was in Austin, I think earlier this year, actually acting in a play as the jailhouse bully, and I'm just going to leave that there. Yeah, I have to go down my timeline to see me in my prison uniform with the wig in two ponytails looking like did 2 years. It's life is very, very interesting, and, you know, I love that you talk about things that should be talked about, and you're giving the levels to the community and our story voices. And that's my 2-3 cents. LaVon, would you like to add your 2-3 cents? Your 3 cents?
I mean, mine is the same thing. It's just, it's amazing, much like writing. You know, as authors, I know we understand the power of our story. And I just think, Jeanette, you have just taken it to another level because you've taken our story and you put it in the lights where people can actually see it. It's not just enough to read about it, but they can actually see it. So it's just a powerful, powerful message. So I love the term creative activist, and you are wearing that title, Queen Creative Activist, very well.
You know, I may write that down now.
Claim it.
Yes,
my girl, when you come and say you're a multiple award-winning artist, and no, saying award-winning is fine, but I may pick up this queen thing.
I'm gonna pick that up. Hashtag amen.
Yeah.
Add it, you know, because that puts your crown on it, put your stamp on it, and you already put your stamp on it because I've never heard that term, but it makes, you know, it makes a whole lot of sense, and, you know, add the queen onto it, and it's all good. So I look forward to seeing you next month in Atlanta and meeting you. And, you know, like I said, I will be in the audience, probably doing my ugly cry and my no holds barred laughing.
Yeah, just don't slide out of the chair. Don't slide out of the chair.
Better than me.
No promises. Look, how I act off camera, off mic, there's reasons.
That's you. That's just you.
There's reasons. Miss Jeanette, how can the audience connect with you and find out more about you and some of your other productions?
Okay, today we're trying to update the website, which is jwhillproductions.com. You can. I have an email list, but if you send an email to me at info@jwhillprod.com, I can give you the link to get into the mail list.
Yay! jwhill@pro.
You mean the email address is info@jwhillprod.com.
And I will make sure that is posted. Kings and queens, it's been a great night. I'm inspired to write some stuff tonight.
Great.
You never know.
I'm just so thankful that you invited me on the show. I just want to tell you that I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much. You know, queens support queens, you know, as long as you don't take pictures of me doing my ugly cry as I'm watching Queen C, we'll continue to remain queen like.
We'll be all right.
That'll be the hashtag, Define You Radio's host, Ugly Cry. I won't be alone. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come on and share Clean Sheets and your other works with us. And we really appreciate, you know, the levels of queenness that we could even present on Define You Radio. You know, you know what I'm saying? You know,
we have to lift each other. We have to lift each other.
Yeah. And we're so multifaceted. That's a $20 word, y'all. Write that down. We're so multifaceted.
Exactly.
And we've added another jewel to the crowns. Like, we're limitless as queens. And like I said, Miss Jeanette, I definitely look forward to meeting you next month and seeing Clean Sheets and checking out whatever else you have going on. And guys, the information will be on the Find You Radio's Facebook page, and that's pretty much what I have to say. With that being said, pens and papers down, class is officially over. Make sure you are connected with tonight's guests and the show. Until next time, remember, your past doesn't define you. It gives you definition, and what you do with that is up to you. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Define You Radio. Make sure you connect with the show on Define.